Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and I'm absolutely delighted to be able to join you today. My guest is not going to be making it, so we're going to make this an open mic hour. So you'll be able to call in and chat with me directly if you so desire. So let me, before we get started, give you the toll-free number that you can call in to, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. I'm delighted to take your calls and give you a reading on the air if you so desire. So, again, give me a buzz. It's an open mic day today, so just know you can call me anytime during the show. I wanted to share with you right off the bat a story that I thought was so significant because it deals with perceptions. It deals with how we can see things, and sometimes we don't really know what we're looking at. This is all about a prison. In fact, it was a brand new prison that was built in British Columbia, and it was built to replace the old Fort Alcan prison that had been used to house inmates for hundreds of years. Now, after prisoners were moved into their new quarters, they became part of a work crew to strip the old prison of lumber. All the electrical appliances, wiring, plumbing, anything that might be reused. Now, under the supervision of the guards, the inmates began tearing down the old prison walls. They were shocked at what they found. And it's hard to believe, because as they were going through this process, the shock continued to grow. Now, there had been massive locks on heavy, very heavy metal doors, and 2-inch steel bars had covered the windows of the cells. What they were shocked about is that the walls of the prison had actually been made out of paper and clay and had been painted to resemble iron. If any of the prisoners had given a mighty heave or a hard kick against the wall, they might easily have knocked a hole in it, allowing for escape. For years, many of the prisoners that were doing the dismantling of the old building, they themselves had huddled in their locked cells regarding escape as impossible. In fact, in this prison, nobody had ever tried to escape because they thought it was impossible. They thought it was impossible. I think often we do the same thing. I know I have. How many times have we had walls of paper, so to speak, around us? And because of our fears, our sense of limitations, our lack of belief in who we are and what we can do, we've been afraid to try something different or something new. It is amazing how we can buy into those limitations. I know, because I've done it. And then all of a sudden something happens and you're given an opportunity and you have a chance to spread your wings and fly, or, if you will, kick down your prison walls and move on. And you know what? Too frequently, we don't do it. And when I've asked some people why they've been afraid of change, and it can be maybe being in a relationship that's absolutely ugly, they'll say, well, at least I know Jane or John. I know who they are, and I know what I'm having to deal with. Instead of looking at, gee whiz, if you're in an ugly situation, move out of it. Take charge of who you are and move along. The same thing can be said about a working situation. It can be said about just everything and anything, dependent on how you're willing to look at it. Sometimes we've had people around ourselves that, gee whiz, they haven't been able to look at anything with a sense of being able to set themselves free. Let me share something with you. It was a personal experience of mine many, many years ago. And it was a very, very big lesson. I have a very, very dear friend. We've been friends for over 40 years now. And her mother was a very, very fearful woman. And she was a woman that always wanted to control everything and everybody around her. Well, this woman, in my mind's view, was always one of the warmest and most gracious people that could have ever been in my life. She and her daughter did a great deal to assist me through some very, very dark moments that I experienced. There came a time in my life, however, when I realized that the mother's effect upon my little girl was not a very positive one, and that it was time to move in to a different direction as far as having this woman taking care of my daughter. And so what occurred is she turned on me. She turned on me with a viciousness that was absolutely incredible. And I can remember standing there, I still see it so clearly in my mind, absolutely stunned about this person who was so warm and wonderful and who had been so caring and had done so much in the way of good things to me, could turn on me with such fury. And in a moment, I realized that she was afraid. She was so afraid because by my taking the initiative for my life and being able to stand on my own two feet, she had no longer the control, the dominion, or the power over my space as she had been able to exert over her own daughter. And her daughter came out to me afterwards when I had made my decision and I had spoken to the mother and gone through this very vicious attack. And her daughter said to me, you know, I wish I had the courage that you have, but I cannot separate myself from her the way you're doing. And I asked her why. She said, I don't know why. I just cannot. And in that moment, it made me realize that sometimes people show fear in a number of different ways. Sometimes they will attack that they really don't want to attack, because they're afraid of being alone. They're afraid of being left out. And they accomplish the very thing that they really don't want to do. But there was no anger, there was no resentment on my part, because I understood. But it showed me how fear can be very limiting. And believe me, I've gone through so much of it in my own life. I know. I'm not sitting here talking to you this afternoon just saying, well, I'm a holier than thou. I'm not. I'm speaking from the depth of experience and my own understanding and the growth that I've had to go through as a person. Remember, if ever you're facing something that's requiring a change and you are looking at wanting to make your life a better experience, think of that prison that had stood in place for hundreds of years. Thousands of people had spent sometimes years of their lives within a structure that was false. Don't you do that for yourself. You don't need to do that. If you're afraid, ask yourself why you're afraid. What are you afraid of losing? What are you afraid of gaining? Do you know sometimes we're afraid of being successful? Yes. Lots of times we undermine ourselves because we want success and we talk about it and we really, really want it, but yet we'll do everything we can to undermine it. So keep that in mind today. Don't let fear be something that you have as a companion. It's a two-edged sword, you know. It can either defend you or protect you when you need to be alert and on guard, or it can undermine you and keep you a prisoner, where there's not very much choice when you take that positioning. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. I would be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight. 877-876-5227. And don't forget to have your pad of paper and pen, because I have got a delightful recipe for a Monte Cristo sandwich. Yes, summertime is always so good for sandwiches. I don't know where you are, but sometimes it's so convenient and easy to fix them. And I've got a recipe for a Monte Cristo that's little hassle, real easy to put together. So I'll be sharing that with you in a little while. I wanted to thank Dr. Joseph for sending me a poem that I really like, so I'm going to be sharing it with you. And it's titled, I'm Glad You're in My Dash. And here's how it reads. I read of a man who stood to speak at the funeral of a friend, and he referred to the dates on her tombstone from the beginning to the end. He noted that first came her date of birth and spoke the following date with tears, but he said what mattered most of all was the dash between those years. 1934-1998. For that dash represents all the time that she spent alive on Earth, And now only those who love her know what that little line is worth. For it matters not how much we own, the cars, the house, the cash. What matters is how we live and love and how we spend our dash. So think about this long and hard. Are there things you'd like to change? For you never know how much time is left that can still be rearranged. If we could just slow down enough to consider what's true and real and always try to understand the way other people feel and be less quick to anger and show appreciation more and love the people in our lives like we've never loved before. If we treat each other with respect and more often wear a smile, remembering that this little dash might only last a little while. So when your eulogy is being read with your life's actions to rehash, would you be proud of the things they say about how you spent your dash? And then Dr. Joe said, I'm glad you're in my life and part of my dash. Share this with ones that you care about and maybe a few strangers or two. So I share that with you on this wonderful day. And I want to thank Dr. Joe again. By the way, if you've got an email, a story, or something you would like to share with me, I want to encourage you to send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna at DelphiInternational.com. And also, this afternoon, if you'd like to give me a call, it's an open mic day, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. And don't forget, if you should decide you would like to be a subscriber on my email list, just send me a note saying, Donna, add me to your subscriber list. I'll be glad to do that. And that email newsletter will be going out in a little bit over a week. And then also remember, you can call in and chat with me today if you like at 877-876-5227. Antiques are something that, oh, they're just so much fun. And I never thought that I would ever get involved with antiques, but when my husband and I got married, we found that we had so much fun. We didn't have much money in our pockets like so many young married couples. We would go out and about just to different places, and we both loved to shop. Yes, I'm fortunately married to a man who just absolutely loves to shop. So we just would have a great time, and going through antique stores, we used to go through Pasadena, California, and different areas down in California because there were so many wonderful, wonderful places that we could stop in and just cruise through. Well, we would try to save our nickel dimes and quarters and a few dollars whenever we could, and we were great ones for doing layaway. And we'd put things on layaway. But antiques offer so much to us because so often they have wonderfully delicious stories behind them. And, you know, antiques, we've all watched the Antique Roadshow, and as that show has been on the air these many years, it's just spurred so much interest in so many different things, and I just love to watch it because I never knew so many unique things existed and that so many people in so many different parts of the world, whether it's in Europe or it's here in the States, they have things that have been passed down through their family, and each and every piece usually has a fabulous story to go with it. Well, usually, when you find something that really pulls at your heart and your eyes, there's a reason for it, and I just think it's just so much fun to chat a little bit about antiques. Now, just antiques usually will maintain their values. If you're a person like myself and my husband, you really like to do this, you will be amazed at how many items maybe that you have had the opportunity to buy, and now you find out that their value has just escalated. Well, I think that especially happened after we entered a new century. But if you think of all the changes that have evolved just in 100 years, heck, let's just go back to the 60s, not all that far back. But there's just been a tremendous amount of change in technology and different materials. And I have some information from Frank Farmer Loomis, who is just a delightfully well-educated man when it comes to antiques. And he said, you know, you'd be amazed at what you might have in your home and that it could be worth a few dollars more than what you expected. When he was a graduate student, he was on an exchange program in Paris. And he said, at the time, this was many years ago, he bought a very ornate 1860s French clock. And he said, it cost me an exorbitant sum of $25. He said, today, that version of clock that I have, that I bought when I was in college, he said it could go up to $450 or more at an auction. Little did he know about that. Well, antiques often are better made than a lot of modern counterparts. It's just so fascinating when you find out about this. And for those of you that live in different parts of the country and you have some of these very, very old homes, you know how so many of them have the lath and plaster walls? Gee, they were great for sound insulation. Just absolutely awesome. And it really was well built, a lot of those homes. Well, today we use drywall, right? So people that have to go and refurbish any of those quote-unquote antique homes usually really have a challenge. Well, there is a lot of difference in quality with products that maybe are copies of what's been done in the past. So the antique item, dependent on how well it's been cared for, often is going to just be very, very much appreciated by those that love to collect it. Also, antiques teach history. You know, it's so much fun when you get into this. It really, really is. We have just had a delightful time. Oh, I've got to share a story with you about one of my antiques. When we were first married, we bought a Victorian desk. And this has a ghost story attached to it. We just loved it. We still have it today. It's one of our pride and joy items, and we love to tell this story about it. And I'm sure you'll be appreciative of it as well. Sometimes items will have something following them. And we had been living in a three-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, California at that time. And we brought this home, and we were there in this apartment over about 6 months until my husband was transferred up to the Pacific Northwest on a job. When we were moving out of our apartment, our landlady, who we just loved, and she just really liked us, we just had the best time, she asked me a question. She said, "Do you have anybody in the one bedroom that's located in this particular section of the apartment?" I said, "No. That's my office." She said, "Do you guys ever stay up until about 3 or 4 in the morning?" I said, "No, we don't." She said, "I didn't think so." So I was curious. She was asking me the oddest questions. What in the world was she asking me these questions for? Well, apparently, we lived above another apartment unit. The people in the unit below us complained frequently that in that bedroom that was directly above theirs, there was this rocking that went on all the time. Well, we did have a rocking chair, a very heavy colonial-style rocking chair in that room. And I said, "Well, that's odd. What time is that supposed to be?" They said, "Well, in the early hours of the morning." I said, "Well, that's very strange because nobody's up then. My daughter's asleep. She's in the other bedroom in the other location of the apartment, and our master bedroom is in another area of the apartment." She said, "I know. You guys have to go to bed early because you have to get up so early." But they complained frequently about someone rocking. And I didn't say anything about it. And I had a conversation with my daughter at the time, however. And she said, "You know, I heard some noise one night, and I got up, and I walked into the bedroom, and there was a little girl that was standing next to the desk." So apparently, we had a little girl who was very attached to the desk that kept company with our rocking chair and had this happy experience of rocking away in the evenings in that bedroom that was never occupied by anyone at any time. The only time I used it was during the day when I was having consultations with people. That was my working office area. So I just want to share that ghost story with you. There's so often so many experiences that people have with antiques. With us, we had a little person that seemed to follow us wherever that desk went. But we haven't had any spooky rocking experiences since then. It was just in that particular apartment building. Donna Sebo here. And if you'd like to give me a buzz, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227 if you'd like me to light up your life with a little bit of insight. As I was saying, antiques make a great history instructor. And when you have people, when you go to visit them and they have any antiques, always ask for the stories behind them because they will just absolutely come up with some of the most amazing tales that will relate to all kinds of things about their family, the experiences they had when they were shopping for it. And it is really a lot of fun to find out about different pieces. And when I was thinking about talking about antiques today, I thought, when you do some shopping, you need to ask yourself what really brings you pleasure. I find so many people that when they get into antiques, they really like to buy what pleases them most. And a lot of the antique collectors that I have met that end up becoming dealers, believe it or not, they get so much stuff, they have to open up a store to try to sell it so they can buy more stuff. And it's just really a lot of fun to talk with them. Victorian mantles. I'll just pop this one up. You know, the Victorian mantelpiece was named for Queen Victoria, obviously. That was a cycle of time when people just really got into very ornate furniture. And the Victorian mantle itself was produced by the 1870s, and it was just amazing how President and Mrs. Abraham Lincoln, around that time, they moved into the White House, and they just changed so much when they did their own decorating. And most goods, now her reign was from 1837 to 1901. That is what people call the Victorian period. So a lot of items will have a different look to it. But so many things were being produced by hand, believe it or not, and it was a slower and more expensive process. And little by little, we were getting more and more people during the latter part of the 1800s and early 1900s that wanted to do them in an assembly line process. They wanted to go to the machine-made materials. So in the 1870s, when it was so prosperous, in middle class, in England especially, was rising dramatically, and we were finding it was beginning to come into its own here in this country, then people wanted to have as much as they possibly could get. So the Victorian era is known often for its clutter, and they would use as much lace doily and vases and photos, candlesticks, anything and everything that they possibly could get around. Can you imagine how much of a drag it was to dust all of that stuff? Yeah. But anyhow, they just had all kinds of things. And the Victorian era is a wonderful era to research and to look at for so many different items because they are so colorful, beautifully carved, and they're just fascinating history. It's a time that had industrial progress. It was a time of extreme craftsmanship and artistry. So if you're into antiques, do some research on the Victorian time. And I don't think you have to have all the clutter that they were used to having, but I think that they did have some beautiful things that make for interesting, interesting items in the home. I know we've enjoyed acquiring a number of Victorian items. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. It's an open mic hour, 877-876-5227. Do you know what is worth more than $57 billion a year to the United States economy? Have a clue? Are you thinking technology? Well, I don't think that's exactly what this is about. It's called microeconomics, converting bugs into greenbacks. And I have in front of me an absolutely phenomenally awesome photo of this humongous beetle. It's insects that are worth more than $57 billion per year to the U.S. economy. Now, who came up with this? It was done through a study by John Losey of Cornell University and Mace Bond of the RC Society for Invertebrate Conservation. They're out to save the bugs. And this is why, and they make some very good points. Were it not for the pollen-ferrying activities of native bees, farmers would not have fruits, nuts, and vegetables worth $3 billion. Cattle ranchers saved $380 million because burying beetles dispose of cow dung. Another $50 billion would disappear from the hunting, fishing, and bird-watching industries without the bugs at the bottom of the food chain. And if it weren't for insects eating each other, this one will tickle you, we would have to spend an extra $4.5 billion a year in agricultural pest control. And I had to laugh because the final comment was, here's hoping the six-legged workers never try to unionize. I just love that. But the truth is, yes, we don't necessarily like the bugs, but they really are very important. And should you ever have an opportunity to go up to Alaska, there is a wonderful place to see outside of Anchorage, which is called Portage Glacier. And when you go to Portage Glacier, which is absolutely a gorgeous, gorgeous place to visit, you will pass a huge swamp area. Depending on the time of the year, depends on when you want to stop off and say hello to any of the ducks and swans and other critters and beluga whales and other whales that go through that area. However, what you find is that at certain times, mosquitoes are there by the gazillions. Believe me, I know, because I happened to be taken there one day, and we stopped, and all of the baby mosquitoes happened to be born at this particular hour when we stopped, or at least it seemed that way. And the sky's just black with them. But the fish feed on them. So do the ducks and a number of other critters. So when the mosquitoes come out like that, yes, you do want to be sure that you have your special protection on, because they will attack you with a fury because they're looking for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and usually all at the same time. But what you want to do is also be aware of the fact that they do have a place in nature. And I know they do cause a lot of malaria and so many other things around the globe, but they're also part of the food chain. And a lot of animals do depend on them. But there's so much that we don't pay attention to in nature that we need to be aware of, because it does allow us to, well, see how everything is interconnected. It's amazing. There is so much that we depend upon in nature that we don't even see that helps our wellness, our well-being. But it is something we have to pay attention to, because as they are part of the food chain, when they get hungry, they're looking for whatever they can get. And they're not able to create their own farms. I don't know of any creature other than the ant, and if you do, let me know, that has farming methods such as we humans do. It's just something to keep in mind. So the birds are always out looking for insects and all kinds of other creatures as well. Mother Nature is really something to study in more ways than one. When I was developing my psychic abilities many years ago, I had a wonderful man, Reverend Floyd Humble, who had said to me, Donna, if you want to understand color and how color affects life, all you have to do is look at nature. And one of the things that I used to do when I was doing public appearances, I used to read flowers, and people would bring in their arrangements, and it's amazing the information that you can find out just through the use of color and form and design. Nature gives you a lot of information that you wouldn't often expect it could reveal to you. This is Donna Sebo. I know we're going to be taking a break in a moment. And hey, those phone lines are open, and no matter where you are in this wonderful country of ours, or even in the world, you can give us a call, and we'll be glad to take your call. I'll be happy to give you a reading over the air, 877-876-5227. When we come back from break, have that pad of paper handy, and I'll give you a recipe for a Monte Cristo sandwich. We're also going to share a wonderful way that you can make $500 in a weekend. And a little bit of this and a little bit of that. So don't go away. Donna Sebo here. Hour of Mind Power. Open mic. We'll be with you in just a bit. Hi, this is Donna Sebo. I want to let you know, give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227. I'll be glad to give you a reading on the air. Okay, here's the recipe for Monte Cristo sandwiches, and you don't have to use ham. You know, these can be made with just about any kind of meat that you like. Typically, the traditional Monte Cristo sandwich is made with ham and cheese, but you can put in whatever you like. But let me give you the typical recipe, and as I said, this one is so easy. Very, very easy to make, and it can be so quick and easy for those of you that sort of like a hotter sandwich, if this is your preference. And I've got some suggestions if you want to make it lower in fat, but let me just give you the basic. Here are your ingredients. You're going to need 2 tablespoons of Dijon mustard, 2 tablespoons of Dijon mustard, 2 tablespoons of seedless raspberry jam, 2 tablespoons of seedless raspberry jam. You're going to need 8 1/2-inch thick slices of bread. And what they recommend is your challah or egg bread. And I think that's because it's so light, and it'll just soak up the milk mixture. Then you're going to need about 4 ounces of your sliced Swiss cheese, and then you need about 12 ounces of your deli-sliced ham. If you like ham, use roast beef. You can use chicken. You can use turkey, whatever you like. Then you want to use 2 eggs, 1/4 cup of milk, 1 tablespoon of butter, and 1 tablespoon of confectioner's sugar. Now, this one I did not understand, so this is totally optional, the sugar. But here we go again. You need the 12 ounces of this sliced meat, 2 eggs, 1/4 cup of milk, and 1 tablespoon of butter. Now, this is what you do. You combine your mustard and your jam, and you spread it over one side of each bread slice. Then you layer your cheese and your ham, or your meat of preference, over the mustard mixture on 4 bread slices, and top with the remaining bread slices, mustard mixture side down. Now, in a shallow dish, you want to take your eggs and your milk, and you want to beat them together. Now, if you don't want to have it as high in fat, you want to make it less, then substitute 1/2 cup of egg beaters for the eggs. And if you want, you can use reduced fat cheese for your regular cheese, and also you can have the low-fat turkey and or ham. You can buy all this stuff at the store, whatever's your preference. So if you're really concerned about the calories, you can just make those little adjustments. Now, your butter you want to put in a large nonstick skillet over medium-high heat, and then you're going to take your sandwiches and dip them in the egg mixture, turning once until all the mixture is soaked up by the bread. I usually like to put it into a big pan that's got a little bit of an edge to it. Just pour the milk mixture in there, the milk and egg, and then if you're fixing 4 sandwiches, it's a lot easier when you have it on a flatter surface. Of course, once that mixture is all soaked up, then place your sandwiches in the skillet and cook, turning once until they're nice and golden brown. Usually it takes about 2 minutes per side. Now, if you want to add just a touch of something different, you can sprinkle it with confectionery sugar, but I usually skip that totally. Who needs that? But I know some people. I have a dear friend. She just absolutely loved Monte Cristos. And often hers were deep fried when she would go to this particular restaurant. And they were deep. They were dipped in a batter, and then they were deep fried. Well, she was skinny as a rail. She could have eaten 14 of them and wouldn't have put on a pound. But this recipe is lighter, and it's not as heavily loaded with fat as it would with a standard, traditional, deep-fried Monte Cristo. But that's still good. It's still delicious, and I think that you would enjoy it if you wanted to fix it for that special occasion, just a little bit of something different that nobody would expect. And it's really easy, especially if you have all of your meats and your cheeses. Everything's ready to go, and all you have to do is put it on real fast, real easy, and very flavorful. Okay, also I was going to share with you how you could make $500 in a weekend. Well, I'm sure you can figure that out. And it's doing a yard sale. I have a lady that I know that whenever she wants to have some extra cash, she pulls together a yard sale. It's just not unusual for her to make $800. She's just always pleased. She just loves to do it. So here are some suggestions by Chris Heiska. And she's known as the yard sale queen. And this is what she recommends. She has 6 tips. And, of course, this is the time of the year for yard sales. The weather's nice, and you can set stuff out, and you don't have to worry that it's going to be rained on or anything like that. It's going to be available for people easily. Get free advertising. She said, you know that you can place an ad in your local newspaper, but you can get a lot of advertising for free. All you have to do is print up an inexpensive flyer with your sales date, time, and location, and post it all over the place. Public libraries, supermarkets, and community centers often have free bulletin boards. Put it there. By the way, also, if you're going to put it, you want to make sure that it's going to be on a bright paper so people will see it. And use a good marker and make sure, if you're going to do it by hand, that people can read what you're writing. You want to have maybe an arrow showing the direction. And if there's some poles around or something where you can stick it up, but make sure it's colorful and it's big enough. I've seen some people, these little dinky signs, and you wonder how anybody can even see them. So make sure it's a good size, it's on a brightly colored piece of paper, and if you think it's going to rain, then you want to make sure that you've got it in some kind of a plastic sleeve. I saw someone do that, and I thought that was pretty sharp. And don't forget, when your yard sale is over, you need to remember where you put them up so you can take them down. Also, clean up before the people start arriving. Your goods should be clean, dusted, and neatly arranged on tables, she said. And it also helps to sweep the walkway and mow the lawn. Neatness makes everything look better. And just like I said, making sure the signs are big and bold, she said, you've got to be able to see. And you need to drive around in your own car to see if you can read them when you go by. If you can't, nobody else is going to be able to read them either. Also, another tip, she said, is sell in bulk. People feel like they're getting more for their money when you sell in bulk. So if you've got 10 books, maybe little, you know, pocket edition books or whatever, you want to sell it for just a dollar for a group of them, batch them all together with a pretty little ribbon and put the price on them, and they'll go. And she said, you can sell Legos the same way at 50 cents a bag, price baby clothes, buy one, get one free. She said, they'll just go like crazy. And you need to time it right. She said, you might think that holidays increase traffic, but most folks don't shop yard sales on their way to picnics or barbecues. So unless your house is on the way to a beach, pick an ordinary, regular weekend. And she suggests you choose a weekend following the 1st or 15th of the month to time your sale right after paydays when folks have money to spend. Pretty good tip. The last one, she said, try a little flattery. If you see someone checking out the reading glasses you have for sale, no matter what their age, say something like, I know you're much too young to need reading glasses, but if you know of someone who does, these are top quality. One of the most successful people I've ever known with yard sales has the most wonderful attitude. She doesn't really care if anybody buys anything. She just has conversation with people. And she talks about a little bit of this, a little bit of that. She has more fun just being around the people. And they just love to spend the money. She doesn't have very much stuff left over either at the end of her garage sale experience. So she's learned a lot. And interestingly enough, she does a lot of these little things. And she makes sure that people know about it enough in advance. And she likes to put her ads in the Penny Saver because she finds so many people pick that up. So in her neck of the woods, maybe it's a Nickel Saver now. But anyway, it's a Penny Saver, Nickel Saver, whatever that little paper is. And it just works beautifully for her, so it possibly could do the same thing for you. Garage sales. They will never go out of style, and you never know what treasures. If you're a shopper, if you just love to go to places like that, you never know where you're going to find a treasure that'll be worth a small fortune. Don't you just love it? I was mentioning antiques earlier. Don't you just love it when you read about someone that happened to pick something up out of a garbage can for free? Or maybe they saw something and they bought it for $3 and they find out it's worth $50,000? Don't we wish? We always wish God find something like that. Well, don't worry about it. One day, it'll happen to you. Yes, just keep looking. It's fun to do garage sales. Now, it's the time of the year when we're out there in our yards and our gardens and there's so much that needs to be done. Maybe, if you're like me, who has time to spend out in a garden? I haven't had time to be out there yet. Well, maybe you want to put something together at the last minute. Well, there's a lot of things that you can do. And Gardening Association horticulturist Charlie Nardozzi has some good suggestions. He said, first of all, choose carefree plants. What are they? They're plants that just love to grow. They don't need a real green thumb. If you put them in the ground, they just grow like crazy. Also, if you put them into pots, if you're living in an apartment, just get some pots. Put some stuff in the pots. They are just absolutely wonderful. Geraniums are just awesome. I love them. They bloom all summer. Black-eyed Susans are great. And you don't have to worry about ordering or getting too many of them. And they don't need a heck of a lot of attention. They just are wonderful. Also, when you're planting during the summer, they say dig a generous hole, fill the hole with water, let it drain, and then plant the plant, and then water it again. And that is if you're just going to put it out in your yard. And it's called puddling. This helps plants' roots grow more quickly, and they really feel more at home. You can imagine just being taken out. Have you ever taken plants out of a pot and you have all this root that's there? Well, they are root-bound, and so they just love to stretch and get those roots out into some extra space. So just remember, when you do that, it really is very helpful for them. And just keep them hydrated, especially if they get a lot of sun. And then wildflowers, they're the easiest. They don't even need fertilizer to grow. They don't require a lot of watering, and they're just gorgeous. You can buy a pre-mixed package of wildflower seeds, and they're very inexpensive. You can even find them at the dollar store. Just scatter them right or before or after a heavy rain, and then you'll find they'll just bloom like crazy. And they do have a dry area wildflower mix that will bloom in the least amount of rain, so they don't need much water either. Just some tips for gardening there for you today. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227. We're going to take a break, and when we're coming back, we'll have some more things to share with you. And this one is a story that's going to touch your heart and your mind in a very, very special way. You're not going to want to miss it. It's about a wonder dog. Donna Sebo here. We are taking a break, and we'll be back right after this. Hi, Donna Sebo here. There's always stories about people's experiences that really touch one's heart and mind. And this one that I became aware of, I thought I would share with you. It's about a woman by the name of Linda. And she went through so many different levels of, I guess you might say depression, disappointment. But there was this special dog that made a difference. And I wanted to share her story with you because this is a woman, Linda Ray, who has had MS, and she's had it for over 30 years, and during those 30 years that she had it, she was able to deal with her symptoms, but it seemed like things started to really get bad for her. Now, she was involved as a teacher in working with elementary kids that had mental and physical challenges, and she said it was something that was really very special to her because she herself had had to struggle because of this disease she's afflicted with. And she said when she was working with them, helping them succeed, when they were having to struggle so much, it really gave her a lot of satisfaction. And she always believed that her working with children was, the reason for her being here in this experience of life. And it was helping her and had helped her for so many years that she was dealing with her own illness. However, there came a day when she was in school with her students that she wasn't able to speak clearly. Her MS was very, very bad. She was slurring her words. Her legs were feeling shaky. And then during this one day, while she was at school, she was walking to the lunchroom, and a bunch of kids ran by her, and she felt like she was just going to collapse. And in fact, she did lose her balance, and she managed to stop herself from falling all the way. But it wasn't the first time, but this was the very, very worst experience she had had in years. And she said it scared her so badly that she wasn't able to work for the rest of the day. Now, she was teaching on a part-time basis at the time she had this experience, and her husband, she said he made a very good living, so we didn't have to worry about an income. And when she went into class and she found herself dizzy and exhausted, she really became aware of the fact that she was going to have to keep in mind that maybe it was time for her to retire from this positioning. So she decided she would give her notice, which she did. And then she found herself at home, and she found that her MS symptoms got pretty bad. And then she one day said it was very depressing to her what she was going through, and she happened to look out of her window, and she saw a little boy, whose name was Richie, playing with a truck on the sidewalk. And she said he looked so tiny down there, just playing and so very, very lonely. And she said, I looked at him and I said, that's exactly how I feel. She was just miserable. Her husband happened to say to her later in the day when he came in from work, I think you need to get yourself a dog. She just looked at him. He said, get yourself a service dog. He said, maybe we can get a golden retriever and it can help you get around and keep you steady on your feet. You need a helper. There's no reason you can't do some of the things you want to do. You just need some help. You need to have assistance from a service dog. Well, she thought her husband was out of his mind. But she got on the internet and found out about golden retrievers. And these dogs make awesome service dogs, and they were trained to do just about anything. They just wanted love and affection and a nice home. She said, well, that's not too much from what people really want. So she happened to find a breeder, and she said, we brought home a beautiful 7-week-old puppy that we named Tucson. And she said, I'd never seen so much energy in such a little tiny furry bundle in my life. She said he was nothing but joy, energy, and love. And our vet put us in touch with an excellent trainer. And she said, Tucson was just a natural. He was totally a people dog, and he caught on faster than Linda Ray did. Now, he was her stabilizer. He was trained to do that. He wore a harness that she held onto as she walked. If she felt weak or wobbly, she'd lean into him. Of course, retrievers are pretty good-sized dogs, so that was easy for Tucson to handle. And that's what he'd do. He'd just steady her and make sure she was fine. And she said, where I had not been able to do everyday activities like go shopping, this type of thing, she said, I could do it. Now, she said, service dogs can't be petted while they're working because it distracts them. But she said, everybody knew Tucson in the neighborhood after a short time, and they just admired him. And she said, once in a while he'd get distracted, and I couldn't blame him, but he was just a joy, and it made such a difference in her life. And she found what happened is that Tucson, not only was he a stabilizer for her in a physical sense, but also in an emotional sense, because she was able to get back into teaching, and she said it was because of Tucson. And she went back into training for a special organization. They're called the Denver Pet Partners. It's part of a Delta Society, an organization that works to enhance the lives of all kinds of people through contact with service animals. And she went into an elementary school and was interacting with young children like she had been able to do for so many years of her life. And she said Tucson was just absolutely an ace, dealt with the kids in the wheelchairs, and the kids were even able to work with Tucson. She said, it has just transformed my life. She said, we visit classrooms on a regular basis. And she said, you know, it's a toss-up anymore. We don't know who enjoys it more, us or the kids that we visit. And she said, he goes with her everywhere, and there's just so much that has enriched her life through this wonder dog, Tucson. Now, if you know of anybody that needs a service dog, it's not a seeing eye dog. Service dogs are trained to perform so many different helpful tasks, and it makes life for tens of thousands of people manageable and joyful. And there are a number of organizations, but here are a few that I thought you might be interested in knowing about. One is Delta Society, and you can find their website, deltasociety.org. It organizes hospital, nursing home, and school visits from furry friends. And again, and they're located in Bellevue, Washington. And you can go to their website, deltasociety.org. Also, the National Education for Assistant Dog Services. You can go to needs.org. That's needs.org. And it's the oldest hearing dog program in the country. And the last one is Loving Paws Assistance Dogs. Loving Paws, PAWS.org. It trains dogs to serve children with spinal cord injuries, muscular dystrophy, and a number of other major disabilities. Isn't it wonderful to know about stories like this? People that have found ways to live their lives with quality and with joy and a sense of fulfillment and satisfaction. Don't ever let fear come in and imprison you. That's not permitted. No. No, you can knock down those walls. You don't have to have those iron bars up of distortion. Nope, the world is your oyster. You just may need to think about it in a different way, not unlike Linda Ray. Don't be afraid to reach out. Don't be afraid to ask. Don't be afraid to know that you can make a difference in this world in your own unique way. Donna Sebo here. We'll be back with you tomorrow, where we're going to have a very special guest talking about why am I so afraid. We'll go into that subject more tomorrow. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a great day. It's waiting for you. Go for it. Bye for now.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blog and service.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.